Okay, welcome to the Freaking 110 panel. I'm Eyeball, and I'll just start with some announcements because that fills up time pretty fast. The stage paintings are available for sale, and if you want to buy them, leave contact info at the information desk. And that's it. Okay. So I'm glad that everybody came here. And how many people here are familiar with, like, the very, very, very basics of phone freaking? Like, okay, good.
Old school freak here, so.
Yeah, so it has to cover a lot of the stuff like blue boxing and red boxing. Okay. So in the beginning there were phones, and then there were humans, and they all had fun with each other. And this gave birth to phone freaking. A weird sexual practice. Nah. As you probably know, phone freaking in the public's eye died out with a switch over to advanced signaling and the SS7 network when it took over, and that prevented you from using tones to, you know, route your own calls across the world and jump from country to country. However, there's a lot more interesting stuff that's left over, and some new stuff. Right off the bat, I'll just get into VoIP and how some people think it's not phone freaking. No. I'll get it basically with in the old days, the only way you could spoof caller ID. Actually, you know what? I'll start off with caller ID. Basically, people faking your caller ID, they call it caller ID spoofing. But you're not spoofing the caller ID, you're spoofing something called the CPN, calling party number. And why that's different from the caller ID is because when you place a phone call to somebody and you use *67 and your phone number is, I don't know, 212-555-5555, if you do *67, your phone number still gets passed on to the terminating switch, to the person who you're calling. Their phone switch still gets your the number, and that number is called the CPN. After the CPN, there's I think a 2-bit flag, one for show caller ID, another flag for don't show caller ID, another as in caller ID restricted, a third flag for unknown caller ID, and I believe the fourth flag for no caller ID whatsoever. Which is why on your cell phones, a lot of times you might notice it says unknown, blocked, unavailable, and other messages like and stuff. Now, caller ID is what happens when the terminating phone switch, in other words, the phone switch of the person who you're calling, sees the CPN, which is your phone number, and sees the flags right after that. And if it sees, show the caller ID, show the phone number, then that's called caller ID. Caller ID is what gets passed between the person who you're calling their terminating switch and their caller ID box. That's caller ID. But from between switches, that's CPN. For the sole reason that caller ID can be blocked from, because the customer never gets the number if it's blocked, but the switch always gets the number, unless it's not there. Question?
A point that relates to that. I've seen situations where you call with blocked, but because the service you're calling doesn't respect the flag,
yeah,
they ask you anyway, because they don't respect the flag, it is actually there.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, so you pointed out that some phone switches ignore the caller ID flags. The private ones. A great example was OmniPoint.
Yes.
Back in the 90s, whatever, late 90s. If you blocked your caller ID and called the phone would not get the caller ID. But if you got to the voicemail, their voicemail system ignored the privacy flags and just said, like, oh, yeah, this person's calling you from this number, even though they blocked the number. And
Oh
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. It's basically, it depends on the switch configurations.
Exactly.
And, that brings me to CLIR and CLIRO. The phone companies are like, have a fetish for acronyms. And there's like a 3 billion acronyms for the same thing, and it causes mass confusion. Another name for a name for caller ID blocking is called CLIR, calling line identification restriction, there's a service called Clero, but I don't know if that's pronounced Clero, but it's spelled CLIRO, which is calling line identification restriction override, which is basically it's a subscriber feature where you can basically tell the phone switch that, hey, you know what? Ignore all the privacy bits after the calling party number, CPN, and send me the caller ID even if it's supposed to be blocked. So, exactly. 911 has it set up for that because I don't know this for 100%. I'm actually speculating on this, but I believe that 911 services use CPN instead of ANI. Well, actually, let me get into ANI then. ANI is a automatic number identification. Also, but in the SS7 specifications, it's known as BTN, billing telephone number, or sometimes it's seen as CN, charge number. And what that is the number to which the billing number of the person calling. So in other words, we're at a hotel, Pennsylvania. There's a billion phones here, but probably only about 20, 30 outgoing phone lines. And so what happens is, and these phone lines, well, not 20, 30, what am I saying? Well, basically, there's outgoing phone lines, but each, actually, I don't know if you could reach individual rooms through extensions, whatever. You have let's say a college, that's a better example. You have a college, it has about 4,000 phone numbers going into it. However, those phone numbers all are coming in on a PRI line. Does everybody here know what a PRI line is? See one? Okay, good. So basically, the billing number that's going out and calls me from that PRI line, from that C1 line, would be the same number because it's the same customer. However, the individual extensions are going out in the CPN field, the calling party number field. So if I'm in a college and I'm calling from the admissions department to somebody outside, it's going to send the billing telephone number, it's going to send it out as the billing number of the college, and the CPN, which charge calling party number, is sent out as your extension, which is basically the admissions office. So 911, I believe, uses CPN instead of ANI or charge number for the sole reason that if you're on the college campus and you have an emergency, they don't want the billing telephone number. They don't care what the billing telephone number is because it could be, campus could be a mile long and it could be some obscure, like one building. The address they might have for it might be a building that's not where the emergency is happening. However, logic would have it that the calling party number would be the number of the place where the emergency is happening. Because on all those 4,000 phone numbers, the billing calls that are going out from all the 4,000 telephones they have, the billing telephone number is going to be the same. Well, most likely will be the same. But each individual phone will have its own CPN going out. It's a bit simplified, but usually that's probably the case. And that's why 911 uses, in my belief, CPN, because to use ANI would not help figure out who's calling. And that's why 911 are people, CLIRO, calling line identification restriction override service, is usually provided to emergency services because they're the ones who will actually need it to know who the hell is calling. Now on to caller ID spoofing. So before, people could only spoof caller ID if they had a PRI line, or they had direct switch access. Because then they could just modify the CPN, the outgoing CPN. Nowadays, we've got VoIP. And with VoIP, it's so much easier because, was there, so you want to ask a question? Or should we just stretch it? Okay. so basically, now with VoIP, there's certain VoIP providers outgoing. Usually, they're the wholesale providers who allow the customer to set their own CPN. Sometimes they send a specific call, ANI along with it. Other times, there's no ANI. That's an ANI fail that's being passed. So what people do is you just use asterisk, use the, I think, IAX connection protocol, and then you just throw in the CPN, and that's what gets passed. So that's one way of spoofing caller ID, which a lot of people here are probably already familiar with that because it's been around for a while. There are other ways of spoofing caller ID, which is basically you call up you any fail through an operator. What's any failing through an operator is basically you pick up your local phone, your landline. Actually, with my T-Mobile account, I can actually reach a local operator by just pushing zero as well. And so you dial zero and tell the operator that you're having problems dialing a number. If it's you might want to call an 800 number for like a calling card system or whatever. So you call zero, you say, hello, operator, I'm having problems dialing a phone number. They'll ask you for the phone number, and you're like, 800, whatever. And they'll say, sorry, sir, we don't allow you to dial 800 numbers. And then you cry, and it's a horrible mess. Now, so what you say is, I'm special, which implies that you're blind or deaf or have no arms, no legs, you're dead. I don't know. It happened to me once. No. The other way of saying is, I have operator privileges, which means the exact same thing. So you just say, hey. Operator, I have operator privileges and would like a number dialed. Then they'll see what number, then you give them the 800 number, and they'll dial it for you. Now, the operator, again, a bit of speculation on my part, because I don't know things for sure, but I believe they're usually located at tandem switches. So when they dial out, they're not calling from an end office, they're calling from a tandem office. So there's no ANI going out because there's no, they're not calling out from an endpoint. A tandem office is point A calls point B, and if the call needs to be rerouted to another switch, the in-between switch is called the tandem office. And it can be more than one, like a call can go through about, I don't know, an infinite amount of tandem switches because tandem stacking was supposedly popular in the old days. Which basically, you just ratchet calls to various tandem offices. So since the operator is placing a call from a tandem office, there's no ANI going out because there's nothing to really bill it to. The companies that handle the call afterwards bill to the company number that's passed in the SS7 IAM message, which is the initial address message. So what happens is basically when... So when the operator calls out, there's no ANI, so you have no ANI being passed to whoever call you're calling. So you're calling an 800 number. So this 800 number, let's say, is also a telephone company, and let's say it's 800 call ATT. Now, 800 call ATT will give you the billing rates by looking at where you're calling from. And what are you calling to? And what are you calling to? And so what happens is basically you opt-divert by pushing zero, getting the operator to call the 800 number for you, and you call 800 call ATT. Call ATT sees you coming in from a no number basically, and they're like, "Sir, what number are you calling from?" And you say, "Oh yeah, I'm calling from, let's say you're in New York." You say the White House, whatever 202, whatever the number is. I can't remember it anymore. Called it too much. So they put into the system that you call from this number, for billing purposes so they could give you your rate. However, it also changes the CPN to that number as well. So now you, so when they place a call for you, it now goes out with the number that you spoofed. The downsides to that is A, you gotta still pay. B, you can't freak people out with weird numbers. Like they can't get a call from 8008, like boobies written backwards and all the other crap. All the funny numbers that people do, like 411, 911, or like zero, whatever. So basically, that's the downside of this method. There were ways actually of committing toll fraud with this. Obviously, I'm ignoring the part about you telling them that you're not calling from your own area, which is already toll fraud. But the other part of toll fraud is, what number are you calling from, sir? Blah, 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 blah. And how would you like to pay for this call, sir? Oh, yeah, just bill it to this number. Like, that's a way, like, toll fraud to be committed. So, obviously, if somebody's going to try this, don't commit toll fraud.
And don't talk about it if you do.
Yeah, don't talk about it at a public conference on a microphone in front of a bunch of people while you're being recorded. I never did this, though, so I'm safe. With VoIP, you can, however, spoof all these freaky numbers, and you're not really committing toll fraud because there's no origin point anyway. Like, the billing rate is not done by where you're calling from, because you're calling from the internet, which exists in, I think, Chicago. nobody laughed at that, that's funny. So, that's how you spoof caller ID. How you spoof ANI, which is different, and actually pretty close to what I just said, because when you spoof CPN, so the ANI has the capability of staying the same. If you're on the PRI line and you spoof CPN, your billing telephone number will still remain the same number that you've been assigned to with the phone company. However, if you jump networks, like when we opt-diverted to an 800 number from, let's say, Verizon to, let's say, AT&T, now AT&T does not have your ANI. So this number she gave them is, I'm calling from this number, it gets put into the CPN field. The ANI field remains blank usually. So when the terminating switch gets that initial address message, the SS7 message, and sees, oh look, it's this CPN, whatever. And look, there's no ANI listed whatsoever. Gee, what is it gonna do? It's gonna use the CPN as the ANI. Therefore, you've spoofed ANI as well as CPN.
In the old days, as far as ANI spoofing, not quite ANI spoofing, but as far as getting nothing, you're saying, it used to be, at least if you were at a crossbar switch, you were a common up until next year, but 4 years ago, you could dial the thing up. Mm-hmm. And as the call was going through, the certain point would go slow. This would very reliably, once you get the timing right, drop you to the special operator.
Because it would pass the ANI.
It wouldn't matter anything, because when you flash the hooks, it was
like
blocking the data flow.
Yeah.
Down the line, like, dropped this up momentarily, so you didn't get the data. They don't have a blank form. Yeah. You do all zeros overnight, depending on how it broke. It would not have the data. You could give anything you want that in that area, but other than how to be a company, you can kind of tell us if anything relatively local, you can give them and.
Sir, can you use your mic, please?
Oh, sorry.
I'll just, yeah.
Actually,
use this one because you're going to get picked up on the video.
You mean my turn? Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, basically, what I was discussing was I'm an old school freak, so I remember the old games, or at least some of them anyway. Now, basically, one of the things that was kind of interesting was if you were on a crossbar switch, and many people were for many years, you know, it's like my area that I'm still sort of in, had probably one of the last ones went out over there. So, some years ago, but it was one of the last ones to go out, I think. No, Brooklyn, all the way out at the end. No, but the point is, if you dialed, say, an operator, and you'd flash your hook switch at a certain point as it was going through, it would momentarily disrupt the data flow, because what's happening was essentially, how did I put this? Well, basically, a relay would drop out, it would drop back in when you let go, but when it dropped out, that momentary period, the data was not being passed. So the operator, so it would abort in the middle in the sense that you would not get the data. But then it would reroute to a special operator because the data wasn't there. Now, at that point, she's looking at her display and getting either nothing or a set of full zeros. At that point, what you're going to get is a... like explaining to our special operator, what number you're calling from, please, or sir, or whatever. And at that point, you could give different data and play games for that. But at that point, there are things you could do with it. So that's old. That's sort of the old school issue with that one. Here you go.
So if you have a crossbar switch at home, now you can mess with it. No, I'm kidding. Actually, I think the reason why that works is... the crossbar switch passes the ANI through MF signaling in the background. Signaling to a device, I don't remember the name of it, that sends it out over MF. So if you flash the line, it probably messes up that connection between the two devices.
Well, that's probably where it's dropped from. I would be probably correct at the point where it was.
Yeah. So now the... let's see, we covered the AI, whatever, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So, what else with the operators? Oh, yeah, actually, screw that. Let's go into a new topic for now until I remember what I was talking about before. No, I'm just kidding. Basically, ACDs, automatic call distributors. Now, if you go to 2600, I think it's spring of 92 or something issue, there's a thing about calling... an area code with 555-1212, which is, you know, directory assistance, the long number for it. And so, and as it's ringing, push down, I believe, the D tone on the silver box. Silver boxes, everybody here know what a silver box is? Well, actually, I'm seeing a lot of people saying no. There's more colors than red and blue. So basically, a silver box is, if you ever look at a DTMF dial pad diagram, it's a matrix of 4x4, which kind of, so you start mentally thinking like 1, 2, 3 blank, 4, 5, 6 blank, 7, 8, 9 blank, *0, pound blank. Like, what's with all the blanks? And I don't know myself. So those blanks are the ABCD numbers that are were used for the priority signaling in the old Autobahn system, the old military phone network that does not exist anymore. It's now been replaced by DSN, Defense Switch Network, which there's two, DSN Red and DSN Black. One of them's classified, one of them's not, and they're all fun to play with, and they're the military, so don't play with it. But, but like, know about it, because it's fun to know about it, and because you can actually publicly call numbers in it without actually getting arrested, because it's how you can reach people on a military base. So those extra four keys, since they weren't just used for the Autobahn, since they were there basically from the beginning of DTMF, they were used for other reasons. So this article pointed out that if you call a directory assistance number and as it rang, you'd push, I believe, D, it would drop you to a special menu with various test numbers and whatever. However, the ACDs that I'm talking about are not the same thing. The ACDs, there's a thing called the LERG, the Local Exchange Routing Guide. It's published by Telcordia, and you can't buy it. I mean, like, big companies can buy it, but there's no way for an individual person to actually buy it. I don't know why. I haven't been able to find a website to buy it on. It probably has something to do with the fact that it costs like $30,000. And so I've tried buying it. I don't have $30,000, but I was trying to get a price quote. They don't give it to you. They give you a sample LERG, which is basically, you can see how it's formatted. So if you're developing applications, you can easily figure out like, hey, this field will have this, this field will have that. So you can pull data off of it. It's a database. And there's various files. Oh, and people, please turn off your cell phones because I forgot to turn off mine. See, That's actually, it was a joke I just played on you guys. It didn't really ring. You all heard a lad buzzing in your ears for no reason whatsoever. So basically, the LURG has various files, I believe 8 files. One of them is called LURG06, I think -odd, and that's the oddball number. The LURG lists all the possible, all the exchanges currently existing in the NAMPA system, North American Numbering Plan Administration System. So that I believe includes Canada as well as North America. I'm just making fun of Canada right now. And basically, it includes all the exchanges. Now, there's a bunch of weird exchanges because normally you need a number like 212, 234, whatever. You're like, what is the exchange, which is the number after the three numbers after the area code? Why does it never start with a 1 or 0? And we all know because with the 7-digit dialing, if you dial 0, you'll go to the operator, and if you dial 1, it'll think you're dialing a long distance number. However, the other reason for that is because various networks, various networks use the zero and use actual exchanges that start with 0 and 1 for special routing purposes. And you can actually access that, and I'll mention that after the N-words thing. I mean the automatic call distributors. Now, automatic call distributors, there are various exchanges that are listed in the LURG, and the LURG, one of the fields in the LURG is switch type. And so switch type usually C5ESS, DMS100, a guy with a bunch of cans and strings in his basement. And so then you find one that's labeled automatic call distributor, and you're like, huh, that's weird. I thought they weren't in use anymore. And you see now, and it's usually stuff like 212555, and you're like, oh, that's kind of obvious. And that's what it is. No, I'm kidding. And there's more numbers. There's one in Colorado. I don't remember the exchange. If you find me after the talk, I can probably give you a list of them because I can easily pull them up because I'm psychic. It's a normal exchange. It's not like a 0 or 1 exchange. It's not a 555. It's just like the Colorado area code, which I can't remember, 208 or something. Maybe. It's what it is. It goes to a Quest automatic call distributor, and what that is basically dial numbers in that exchange are like whatever the NPA, whatever the exchange, let's say 001, and you get their local operator, a local operator for some specific city in Colorado. You call the number instead of 0001, you call 0002. And you don't get a local operator now in Colorado. Now you get a local operator for Utah. And the next number gives you a local operator for some other place. And these operators are all freaked out because they have no idea where you're coming in from because there's no fields being passed to them. Like they can't see your ANI, they can't see your CPN. So they have no idea what's going on. You can joke around, say, hey, I'm a technician, I'm just doing tests. Can you do something really stupid that you're not supposed to do? And they'll do it, but that's a bug in humanity. So what happens is basically that these things are there, they exist, they're easy to reach, and they're illogical because if you think about it, there's not much of a reason that you need these things. There's one, Hawaii Telecom has one, and it always freaks people out because the first number you call, 0001, I think, is actually the 911 system. And when you hear 911 operator, you're like, oh, whoops, sorry. Click. Because, like, you don't want to mess with 911 because, it's emergency, people. So in other words, it makes no sense that those numbers exist because you could reach so many different internal, external numbers in a telephone company, and they pass no information to the operator, so they're all very confused and they hate their lives. Now N-words, so, and other interesting stuff. So as I was saying before, no exchanges start with a 0 or a 1 because the phone company hates those two numbers because they're not into binary. They're more like hexadecimal. But so the letter lists, I forget the file name. Let me look it up. I'll go home and come back in a few seconds. It lists exchanges that start with a 0 or a 1 and the uses. And obviously, I don't have a LERG. If you have a copy, please let me share it, or let me have it. If you don't, no problem. But basically, there's a file that has all the these exchanges, and these exchanges provide you access to various internal phone company stuff. And what is operators? What are NWords operators? Most people probably here won't know. Most people, not all, because I don't know. Like, I couldn't find any information about it when I was Googling for it. However, NWords operators are, I work for Verizon, you work, I guess, we'll use AT&T again as a great example because it's three letters and easy to remember. So I'm a Verizon operator, and I'm calling a local area that's used to be in SBC territory that's now owned by AT&T. And I'm worried about my relative because her phone's always busy. Like, and it's my grandma, and you know, maybe she fell or whatever. So like, I'm worried, so I want to find out if she actually is just like a party liner, or if, you know, or if she's just actually injured or whatever. So I call up my local operator, and I'm like, I'd like to do a busy line interrupt on this Florida number or whatever. And so the operator's like, okay. But she's Verizon, she has no access to AT&T's system. So she looks up in her little page of like, she looks up the phone number I gave her, finds the letter code for the exchange that serves that area. It starts with a 0 or 1. It's a tandem code. It's a code for a tandem switch in that area. So she finds it. So it's, let's say it's, oh God, I don't know any Florida numbers. So I'll make up an area code. Oh, no, I know one, because, sure. 321, 234, whatever. So she looks up and she's like, oh, yeah, the 321234 is served by the tandem 001. So she calls 321001, and then the operator service code, which can last anywhere from, I think, 2 to 10 digits. And the operator service code tells the tandem to which operator service to connect the call to. In this case, the operator is looking for an NWords operator. An NWords operator is an operator who helps out other operators from outside the company. So this AT&T NWords op picks up and says, AT&T NWords, how may I help you? And the Verizon operator is like, hello, this is whatever, Becky from Verizon. I have a customer on the line who likes to do a busy line verification on this phone number, blah, 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 blah. Becky, so the AT&T op's like, yeah, whatever, okay, cool. I'll do it right now. And then your grandma is a party liner, and then you kill yourself. And you're like, no. Anyway, but yeah, like, and that's how Verizon ops can do busy line verification on AT&T's network through NWords, because NWords is an operator for operators. That's the definition you find in Google, but nobody explains the other part, so you're like, and so you can reach that through these ACDs, and there's, I believe, 10 numbers, 20 numbers I found that are actual ACDs that are not like 212555 numbers, but actual exchanges. And oh no, I'm sorry, that's not ACDs. Wow, brain fart. These inwards ops, these exchanges that start with a 0 or a 1 are published in the LERG. You can reach them. I can't tell you the specifics because I'm not the guy who found out about this, so I'm not going to tell you the very specifics. Basically, you have to figure out how to route your call. And you can route your call through operators by saying, hey, you know, hello, operator, I'd like to have a number dialed. And you can actually convince them to dial a number that's not allowed, like 212, let's say 001, whatever. You can convince them, it works. If you're scanning for these special exchanges, for operator service codes, you're not going to find them. I think the exchange in that situation is called the tandem access code or something. It's not. Anybody know what I mean by exchange and NPA here? Or are you all blank? Okay, I am seeing blank faces. Okay, you got a phone number. Again, 212-555-1212. So 212, that's the area code. However, obviously, telephone companies love acronyms, so for them, it's the NPA, Numbering Plan Account or something. What's it? Numbering Plan Area. Thanks. The next three digits is the exchange. It tells a telephone switch can have the exchange basically tells the routing tells the switch that handles you to what switch you're going to. A telephone switch can have one telephone switch can be serving multiple exchanges. However, one exchange cannot be in multiple switches. So 212.234 can be on two separate switches. However, one switch can hold 212.234, 235, 236, and whatever. There's services online where you could look up what switch services your extension. In New York, it's easy because most switches that are Verizon owned, let's say, what's a good one? 718-996, 9901. Dialing 9901 in as the suffix will give you the switch information. In this case, so you got the 718, that's the NPA, the area code. 996, that's the exchange, which is basically the switch, but those three numbers are called the exchange. That's all you need to know right now. And the last numbers are called the suffix. And so you'll hear a voice recording going, you know, you've reached the whatever, GS0 or GMS or ESS. GS0 being if there's more than one switch in the central office, it tells you which one. And that'll identify which exchanges are being served by the switch in Verizon area in New York. That's that. So, which one I've left? What can I go into? Perfect. Okay. So, I need water. Notes. Oh, wow, I didn't cover that as well. So, yeah, basically, exchange, whatever, inwards. Yeah, so inwards, oh, yeah. So, you can use an operator to call inwards. I call inwards, but there's more services than just inwards. And there's other ways to write calls. Let's say you call 800-CALL-ATT. That means you can now dial out from AT&T's network. And it's up to AT&T themselves to block you from dialing out the special codes. And I think the name for the blocking, so you can call zero and one exchanges within a telephone network, is called D-digit blocking. Because an area code is three digits, and in the fourth digit would be the zero or one. So it would be the first digit of the exchange, so it blocks that from being a zero or a one. And that's why when you call, when you have seven-digit dialing and you call zero or one, zero will give you to an operator, or one will give you to makes the switch know that you're making a long-distance call, because if it didn't, it'd be routed to all these weird internal telephone company numbers, and everything will burn down, and we will all die. Okay. Now let me get into something else that's interesting, hopefully to you. Telephones. Okay, that was a big pause. Payphones specifically Verizon's payphones, and I love the word specifically because I'm about to say specifically next. Specifically the Verizon hybrid payphones. Most people here hopefully know what COCOTs are. Yes, who knows? Raise your hands. Have some exercise. Half the crowd. Basically, COCOTs are customer-owned, coin-operated telephones. In other words, you go to a deli, you walk inside, there's a payphone there, and you realize that, hey, that's not a normal telephone company payphone. That's a payphone that's probably owned by the deli. The line's provided by the deli, probably. Then that means it's a COCOT, because it's owned by the customer, not by the telephone company. Telephone company payphones are called BOCOTs. Bell-owned coin-operated telephones, so-called because they're owned by the telephone company, that's the Bell reference, and whatever, and the coin-operated, that's the BOCOT part. Now, COCOTs have the way they're designed is, since they're on the customer's line, the customer can have the phone company provision the line to have as a payphone. So you So basically, you can use DC switching, which is, you know, electrical switching, to figure out if coins have been put in. However, most cold cards are in the normal phone line. Everything is controlled by the actual payphone itself. In other words, if you ignore the payphone and clip onto the line, you're in the normal phone line and you can do whatever you want. Bocards before were just normal phones, basically. I mean, not normal phones, because they took coins. But if you clipped onto the line itself, you could not dial out. Like, they would use various signaling, advanced signaling, red boxing, basically, DC signaling, which is war games, you know, stick a paper clip into a phone, and nukes get launched? No. That's DC signaling, and the AXS system for AT&T for long distance. That's how it was in the older days. So what did AT&T do in the year 2000? They stopped AXS, so you couldn't use, red boxing to call long distance. But Verizon, which wasn't Verizon at the time, it was 9X, was planning actually for this. And in 96, you could find a memo, I think, not a memo, it's a press release from 9X about Alcatel. Alcatel used to make payphones back then. Now they're, I believe, Qualtech? It's just with a Q. That's all we need to know. And so basically, they started making payphones with firmware in it. At Beyond Hope, 97, like, there were rumors going around about how somebody saw a payphone technician plug what looked like a laptop directly into the phone. And like, nobody knew what the hell that was about, but now we know that's the Alcatel people replacing normal bocards, which were just dumb payphones with firmware capabilities. What would be, in other words, your local COCOD, your local customer-owned telephone, the one that everything is done within the payphone itself and nothing is done in the line, that's the Verizon payphones you see outside in this area, for example. They actually have firmware. However, things are still done with the line. And so the firmware remained quiet for about 4 years until AT&T stopped using AXS. Does everybody here know what AXS is? If no, just go back and watch Freaking 101 from The Lasso. Basically, it's it used tones to signal pay. If you put cash into a payphone, payphone would play tones down the line, and the switch would know that, hey, this guy put in cash. Or if it was long distance, the long distance telephone company would be like, oh yeah, there's money in the payphone. So, and you could obviously play the tones and, you know, make free phone calls, and that's red boxing. Now, so 2000, AT&T gets rid of AXS. Now you can't make long distance telephone calls with payphones, Verizon payphones. So how does Verizon get around this? They put in firmware. They change the way that payphones handle calls. So now if you pick up a payphone, a Verizon payphone, you hear dial tone. That's not a real dial tone. That's a fake dial tone. How do I know this? I'm psychic. You clip onto the line and you start dialing a number. And you listen on the payphone and you listen on your butt set. And you're not hearing the same thing. On the telephone, you hear beep, 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 you know, as you're dialing. I can't do DTMF for my voice, I'm sorry. On the butt set, you hear ring, and you're like, how does that happen? Because the payphone, the Verizon payphone, is giving you a fake dial tone. And why is it giving you a fake dial tone? To find out what you're dialing. So it can do, to figure out if it's a local call. If it's a local call that's within the switch, if it's a local call that's outside of the switch, and if it's a call that's outside of the LATA, local access toll area, which basically means long distance phone call. And listens to that to know how to control the signaling that you put cash in. If you're calling within the switch, you have a direct connection to the telephone switch using the phone line. So it does tip ring signaling, which you can look up by yourself because I'm out of water, to signal that you put cash in. push cash in, it grounds, I think, the tip for 2 seconds, then the ring, and the switch goes like, oh, this guy put cash in. That's what if you call 411 in New York City, they'll say, did you put cash in, sir? You're like, yeah, I did. And they're like, no, you didn't, because they can actually see you putting the coins in, because they have a display that tells you how much cash you put in. And if the phone line is not grounded properly, their display will fluctuate and be like, oh, I see you put in 10 cents. I mean 40. I mean 3. And, like, they'll freak out and they'll put a hole for you anyway, because they're nice people. Now, so basically, whatever. Oh, yeah. So now, outside of the switch, since you're outside of the, if you're placing a phone call outside of the switch, it's not going to use your switch to place the call. It's in the, I mean, it will, but it will go to a tandem switch. So for telephone signaling for that, and it's still going to be in the Verizon area. So what does it do? It uses ACT. So if you actually hook up a buzzer to the line and you put in cash to the payphone and you call an area that's not served by your switch, the switch that serves the payphone, but in an area, let's say you're in East Manhattan, you call West Manhattan, you'll hear the phone, payphone, red box. You'll actually hear it go beep, 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 beep. You're like, haha, I thought it was illegal. Now, actually, I'm giving it a bit too much credit. The phone does that no matter what call you do. Like, if you put coins in as you, even if you're making a local call, it always red box down the line, no matter what. Now, if you make a long distance phone call, on the other hand, that's different. In New York, it works because the firmware's, it does something weird. I'm not too familiar with that part yet. That hasn't been figured out yet. However, if you go to New Jersey, for example, and you make a long-distance phone call with a Verizon payphone, you'll get a reorder because there's no long-distance service on those payphones, and they won't give you your money back. And that's how they make their money. Now, the firmware does other cool stuff, like you got a fake dial tone. That means it's a prompt. It's not a dial tone. It's a prompt. So how we found this all out is we started seeing the Verizon payphones. They suddenly got the Phone One logo on the handset because Phone One was the VoIP, I think it was a VoIP company, that was paid to handle long-distance phone calls for Verizon. And so there was a little sign on, welcome, 2-1, and you're like, why is this woman so slow? Because that's Gemini 2, the slower, older version of Gemini. And this caused a lot of confusion before because we couldn't figure out why the woman's voice was slow. But there's two versions of Gemini currently out there. Gemini is the system that was developed by Alcatel back in 96. So the 96 Beyond Hope rumor came out last year when we realized, holy crap, this is all related together. And the Gemini Calling Center is a calling center for Gemini support for the Verizon payphone technicians. And that's what Pound Coin is. Now there's another number called Pound Phil, and that's their test number. There's also other test numbers like Pound, I don't know, test. That it's a coin test that does not work properly. If Verizon hears this, please fix that, because it took my 40 cents. It asks you to put in 40 cents. Why 40 cents? Nickel, dime, and a quarter equals 40 cents. Oh, wow, I can do math. No. So basically, that's that. So that's Gemini. So now their test number is Pound Phil. And Pound Phil has an Easter egg in it, which is like, because, like, we say telephone companies, say government, but like, they're just abstract concepts because people work in it and people are assholes and also great beings because they, you know, people are people. So, Pound Phil.
Enter your authority number.
$73.90. I'm rich.
Press 1 for status. Press 2 for dial test. Press 3 for line number identification. Press 4 for receiver test.
What does it skip?
Press 6 for the medallion number of this phone. Press 7 to be connected to a
what else does it skip?
Customer. Press 9 for ring back test.
So what happens if I push 5?
Hang up. The number you press is not a valid choice.
What about 8?
Press